Okay, so let's first take the opportunity to acknowledge that we have a sheer dedication, upcoming yahrzeit of Yonatan Mordechai ben Elisha Tzaro Kalevi, whose yahrzeit is coming up on Chaf Iyar. It was a young boy from Ramat Beit Shemesh. A family used to live in Ramat Beit Shemesh, who passed away under obviously very tragic circumstances. How many years ago has it been already? 4 years ago. 5 years ago. I remember it. We remember it well, those of us who lived in Ramat Shiloh. And Shamash Evan Aliyah, his parents should have only Simcha and Chizuk and Nechama. We thank Meredith and David and family for sponsoring. So I was thinking of what to speak about, and my eye was naturally drawn to Perkei Avos. And even though we haven't, as a shul in any official format, been learning Perkei Avos, but if I'm not mistaken, this is Perek Daled week. And therefore, I thought about giving a shiur, and I opened up Perek Daled, and you don't have to go past the first Mishnah in order to be captivated. And therefore, I thought we would explore both Begadol, but also the specifics of this incredibly important Mishnah. I think the, like so many parts of Perkei Avos, various just lines or phrases, even in this Mishnah, are quite famous. We don't always learn the Mishnah as a unit, but there are so many famous lines, even just in this one little Mishnah. In the name of Ben Zoma, who taught us, Ezehu Chacham, Halomein Mikol Adam. What does it mean to be a wise person? Someone who learns from everybody else. And the Pasuk from Tehillim, Mikol Malamdai Hiskalti. What is Igibor, Ezehu Gibor? What does it mean to be strong, to be powerful, to be mighty? Kovesh Titro, someone who can overcome their evil inclination, their bad habits, their natural proclivities for things that perhaps are not so good. And Pasuk in Mishle, Tov Erech Apayim, Gibor, someone who is slow to anger, who has a slow temper, who's patient, that's even better than a great mighty person, Umoshel Berucho, Melukad Ir, and someone who's Moshel Berucho. What exactly the difference between those two things are, actually we're going to relate to in one of the sources that we get to later. That's even greater than someone who can, you know, ensnare or trap or surround a city and conquer a city. Ezu Ashir, what does it mean to be rich? Everyone wants to be rich. Guess what? You already could be. Hasameach b'chelko. If you are happy with your lot. Shneamar, Egia kapecha ki tochal, Ashrecha v'tov lach. So if it's v'tov lach, if it's good for you, Ashrecha b'olam hazeh, then it'll be tov lach also in olam haba. That's the way to live a happy and successful life. And then the Mishnah adds, I think, probably the least famous of the phrases in the Mishnah, Ezehu mechubad. Who doesn't want to be honored and respected? So how do you do that? Hamechabed esebrios, by giving honor and respect to other people, as the pasuk, proof text is brought from Shmuel Aleph. So what I'd like to focus on, and this is just following the lead of the Mefarshim, is primarily the first three, which again are the very famous phrases and ideas in the Mishnah. But Yemirtzeh Hashem, through doing that, we'll also get to the fourth one as well. But in order to, I guess, set the stage for all of the specifics, I think there's some very interesting points that we can appreciate from the Bar Tanura. But in order, before we see the Bar Tanura, let's set the stage by asking a few questions. And the first question, very simply, I would say, is why are these things important? Is it really true? Is this something that Judaism venerates? Okay, Ezehu Chacham, maybe, I guess so. Although there's no mention specifically of Torah here, but okay, maybe. But a gibor, an ashir, to be strong, to be rich, to be powerful, doesn't seem that these are things that we would typically be focused on. After all, if you take a look at the third source on the sheet, the very well-known pasuk in Perek Tet of Yirmiyahu, Ko Amar Hashem, Al Yitalel Chacham Chachmato. Okay, the Mishnah is telling us what it means to be a Chacham, but the Navi already told us, don't be so excited to be a Chacham, don't be a show-off, don't pretend. Al Yitalel Gibor B'Gvurato. You think you're so strong, you think you're so mighty, you know, don't pat yourself on the back for that. Al Yitalel Ashir B'Oshro. Right? Dab with the three things that the Mishnah is focusing on, the Navi has already very much discounted, to put it mildly. What is important? Someone who learns a lot and gets to know Hashem, etc., etc. These are the ones, right? So being spiritual, being righteous, being a tzaddik, that, okay, that we get. That the Navi says, that's what Hashem wants.
but a gibor, a chacham, and evidently that's the type of chacham that's not necessarily close to Hashem, and an ashir, the rich one, the powerful one. The Navi's already told us that, you know, okay, maybe in the vanity of vanities, hevel havalim, in this world, all sorts of people unfortunately give extra emphasis to those things. But the Mishnah is giving us like a self, you know, a self help. You know, if you want to be a chacham, you want to be a gibor, you want to be an usher, this is what it means. Why would we want to do that? Don't I learn Navi? Didn't the Navi tell me that these are not things that are supposed to be venerated and supposed to be lauded? Moreover, there's also a Gemara, which is very interesting, because the Gemara points out, and this is something that I think we've all at some point in time, I hope, given thought of. When you think of characteristics of a person in yourself, but let's say it's easier to think about other people, right? It's always easier to think about other people, that people look up to, that they respect. So at some point you realize that all sorts of things that people respect or admire about another person or get them covered in this world, many of them, maybe they earned, they deserved credit for. But many, the person did nothing to deserve, right? So, you know, without being political at all, right, we're living in a certain moment in Western civilization, so those of us who still feel connected to the United States. And, you know, the word of the day that everyone is obsessed with is privilege. So even if you assume that is, you know, maybe overemphasized and being distorted as a political ideology and neo-Marxism and whatever, all sorts of stuff's going on in America now, which is not so simple or good. But there's a certain, like every sheker perhaps, it all starts with a certain basic truth. Of course people are born with certain advantages. That's always been true. I assume it'll always be true. So a person, so in America, actually, you always used to have that culture, you know, the American dream. Right? There are certain people who are born into wealth. Okay, you know, maybe you're jealous of their wealth. But, you know, someone who picked themselves up by the bootstraps, you know, worked themselves, you know, that first generation, right? That's the person who really earned it, or so we think, right? And then sometimes, you know, people love beautiful people. But what are the, you know, now I guess nowadays people do a lot of work to be beautiful. Right? Dermatologists and others are very busy, injecting all sorts of things and cutting all sorts of things. But in general, right, people, you know, it's a, you win the genetic lottery. Some people are born, you know, tall and handsome or dark and beautiful, and other people have different body types. So again, if you're attracted, that may be just a physical reality, a chemical reality, but the idea that we admire it, that we are, for what? So that's true about a lot of things, right, if we think about it. The Gemara tells us in Nida that many of these things, including the things that we think people earned, really they didn't. Says the Gemara, very famous, that in the name of Rav Papa, Chinuch Bar Papa, Oso Malach Hamamuna, this is the fourth source on your sheet, Oso Malach Hamamuna Al Harayon, Laila Shmo. Okay, this is interesting for those of you who are into Kabbalah or mysticism. There's a certain Malach, you know, who is in charge in Mamuna on conception. You know, is this, act of, intimacy going to lead to, someone becoming pregnant or not? Well, there's a certain Malach that's going to make that decision about that biological shidduch that's happening inside. That's Lila. Why called Lila? I don't know. Okay? Says the Gemara in continuation. No tel tipa amida lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So once there is the shidduch, fertilized egg, we have the first stages of biological life. Says the Medrash, I'm going to assume it's metaphoric, but it's still quite powerful, whether it's literal or metaphoric, that this Malach, now we know called Lila, takes this first, most small, teeny, basic building blocks of life, this genetic material, and brings it before Hashem and asks God, Ribono Shel Olam, Tibazu, Matehe Aleha, this little, basic, fertilized egg, it's nothing, you can't even see, you need a microscope to see it. Eventually it's going to grow into a person that's going to be born. What's going to be this person's future? Gibor o chalash. Going to be strong or weak? Chacham o tipesh. Wise or foolish? Ashir o ani. Rich or poor? So says the Gemara. Adkan, what happens up in Shemayim? Says the Gemara. Ilu rosho tzadik lo kamar. How come the angel doesn't ask Hashem, is this person going to be righteous? A tzadik? Do great things, or Russia, or be wicked. Says the Gemara, I'll tell you why. It's based on a teaching of Rabbi Chanina, who taught us, HaKol B'Dei Shamayim, Chutz Meir Shamayim. And you know why? Amazing Gemara. Because, so to speak, Hashem doesn't know yet. that's going to be for this person, this little baby, this boy or girl. He or she is going to decide whether they're a tzaddik or a rasha. But what's the implication? Everything that came before it in the Gemara, everything that this angel did ask of Hashem, who decides that? Not the person. Hashem. So, wouldn't you know it? In this Gemara, what are the three things that are not even in our hands? The very three things that are in the Mishnah, Pirkei Avos. And if you think about it, if this has already been determined when you were a little tipa, that the Malach has already... So what do you deserve? What do I need a Mishnah for? What do I need to work on it for? What would I... Do I deserve any credit for being a Chacham? Or a Gibor? Or an Ashir? The Gemara is telling me how to do it. What's the difference? It sounds like if I don't do anything, even if I never learn the Mishnah, I'll be an Ashir anyway, if that's what Hashem decided. I'll be a Gibor anyway, I'll be, right? This seems to be quite a source for predeterminism. So, if it's already been determined, first, okay, leave aside the fact that maybe it's going to happen no matter what I do. And also the questions that would raise. That's not our topic. But it certainly doesn't seem the kind of thing we should be aspiring towards, and let alone deserve credit for. And yet, somehow all of this is, you know, implicit in the Mishnah. I'd say that's two different questions. Perhaps you could say it's the third question, or even just to add to the confusion, is the fact that yet, on the other hand, we do have sources which seem to indicate that maybe these things are actually good and should be respected and aspired towards. For example, the Gemara Nedarim, the next source on your sheet, says the Gemara, a very fascinating idea, which we won't dwell on other than for the point it's relevant to our topic. Eina Kadosh Baruch Hu Masher Shechinaso Ela Al Gibor Ashir Chacham Va'anav. Who can become a Navi? Well, it could be a man. We know it could be a woman. But okay, fine. Anyone could be a Navi. Well, what do I have to do? What are the job requirements to become a Navi, right? You know, every time the company sends out, or the search firm sends out, you know, looking for a certain employee, they give a list of certain basic things, you know, needs this amount of degrees, this much experience. So what are the things that are necessary to be a Navi? I'm going to go on LinkedIn, and I'm going to try to find out, what would I need if I wanted to go for that? So says the Gemara, four things are prerequisites, right? So as it so happens, a Navi, a topic which I definitely like talking about, since I'm hoping that maybe it'll help me with that. All the topics I like to speak about are things that I need to learn myself. That's one of the key fringe benefits of teaching Torah. So Anav, good. It's another topic. We've spoken about it. I'm sure we'll speak about it in the future. But wouldn't you know it, of the four, three, they all seem to go together always, are again the three we're talking about. But here, this seems to be a good thing. You can't be a Navi unless you're a Gibor, unless you're an Ashir, unless you're a Chacham. Is that something I have to aspire towards? First of all, again, the whole issue of determinism and can I become one? That's one kind of question. Again, put that on the side. But it certainly sounds like if that's a prerequisite for Nevuah, that's a good thing. But didn't the Navi say, Al Yitalel Chacham Chachmato? Doesn't sound like such a good thing. Now, you could say the Navi was just saying, don't be a braggart. Al Yitalel. Okay, I hear that. I'm willing to accept that, but the thrust of that, of the Gemara, it just sounds like this is not stuff that you're supposed to be focusing on. Right? Focus on being a good person. You're a Shamayim, that kind of stuff, right? And yet, again, all of this is just by way of background to ask, what is the point of the Mishnah? Before we get to what exactly does it mean that an Ashir is this and a Chacham is that, but why are we even talking about this if the record seems to be so mixed, to put it mildly? You know, especially with those early sources that seem to very much dismiss, even the importance, let alone the respect that should be owed to someone in these areas. And I introduced all of this because I love the very short comment, but he makes it three different times, of the Bartanura. Totally changes the Mishnah. If you just read the Mishnah without the Bartanura, Ezohi. These are definitional questions. In the Jewish dictionary, rabbinic wisdom, rabbinic Judaism is a repository for wisdom. Everybody knows that, even non-Jews know that. What does Judaism think of wealth? What does Judaism think of strength, of courage? Right, those are great questions. Wouldn't you know it? It seems like the Mishnah here in Pirkei Avos is telling us, definitions. What is a gibor? Right? I'm just reading the words. Ezuhi gibor. Ezuhi chacham. Ezuhi washir. That's not how the Bar Tanura reads the Mishnah. Says the Bar Tanura, you say, go back down to the second source on your sheet, right under the Mishnah. What does it mean, Ezuhi chacham? Shera'ui shiyithalel b'chachmato. Not what is a chacham. What type of chacham is deserving of praise? What type of ashir is deserving of praise? What type of gibor is deserving of praise? He says it all three times. Hara'ui lo l'hitalel, shara'ui lo l'hitalel. To me, that is a completely different perspective. The Mishnah is not teaching us what is a rich person. The truth of the matter is, I don't know if I needed wealth and financial advice, I wouldn't go to the rabbi. And I don't know that I would necessarily look. I mean, it's not, you know, sometimes we overcomplicate things. You know what a rich person is? Someone with a lot of money. And in a chanami, that's not the kind of thing we'd expect the Mishnah to be focusing on, let alone the Mishnah to be praising. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I don't think Judaism is anti-wealth at all. But we're not pro money as a value, per se. It's instrumental. But that's not the kind of thing Mishnah would talk about. And in a chanami says the Bar Tanura exactly. That's a parv thing. Maybe it's good, maybe it's bad. But the Mishnah is talking about something that's not parv. That there are some wealthy people, or some forms of wealth, which are actually a moral good. They're not moral neutral. They're not instrumental. Inherently, they're good. What's the type of wealth? There are other types of wealth. I'm not giving you the definition of wealth. We're saying, what type of wealth is deserving of praise? There's lots of scholars, lots of smart people, lots of chachamim out there. But what's the type of chachma that's deserving of respect? That's royal hitalel. We certainly know, I assume it's true in all centuries, but sort of the 20th century, and the 21st century is looking, you know, not so great on this front either. You know, I wouldn't necessarily hold the people with the highest IQs and the most, you know, chairs and academic positions in the world of academia as moral paragons. Right? Just because you're a chacham doesn't mean, you know, by society standards at least, doesn't make you deserving of praise. There's lots of different types of chacham. Some are deserving of praise, maybe some aren't. Says the Bar Tanura, that's what the Mishnah is asking. What's deserving of praise? After all, again, he doesn't quote any of the sources we saw. I added those. But I don't think it's a huge speculation on my part to say, because these sources are in the back of the Bar Tanura's mind. Why do I care about what's a chacham, or what's an usher, what's a gibor, if the Navi already told us those aren't things necessarily to be focused on? Ali talel b. And the answer is, says the Bar Tanura, some are and some aren't. Nothing to say wrong with being big and strong. Nothing to say wrong with having a very big bank account. But that's not necessarily what the Mishnah is talking about. That's not what's worthy of praise. The Mishnah is trying to answer a very specific question. What types of strength, wealth, and smarts and wisdom are deserving of praise? So now, if we understand the question, which according to the Bar Tanura, we didn't understand when we first read the Mishnah, now we're ready to investigate the answers. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think he's probably just, you know, we have this, Mefarshim do this all the time, right, where they read all sorts of things, you know, in between the lines. It's a fair question. I don't know if this is the answer is sufficient, but I remember you bringing me back to, you know, 25 plus years ago, one of my early years in a Rosenzweig Shir, where I think this might have been something he was talking about to the Shir. I don't think this was in a private conversation, but he mentioned that pshat does not mean the literal meaning. That's a mistake. Pshat is, depending on which mefarish you are, let's just say it's Rashi, for example, what is the simplest understanding in light of your other assumptions? Now, all things being equal, the literal translation should be that. And there might be. Maybe even a huge percentage of the time. But, and this had to do with whatever Gemara we were learning at the time, if you're a mefarish X, you're Rashi, and you come to a given text, whether it's a pasuk in Tanakh or it's a Gemara, and you already have certain assumptions. Presumably they're not, you know, arbitrary assumptions. Maybe they're based on other sources or whatever. But you come to this text already convinced that certain thing must be, or often it's certainly can't be. Can't be! Because other Gemaras tell me that, whatever. And now the words here seem to say this. So what does Rashi do? Or Ibn Ezra, or Ramban, or Rashba, or Ramban, or whoever. Right, they give you something which you would then ask fairly, legitimately, the question you just asked. Okay, that's nice, it's very brilliant, it has a fit into the words. So we might be tempted to say, well, okay, he's giving a drush. And everyone's like, pointless. No. Rashi would not say that's drash. That's pshat. Why? Because that's the most plausible reading of the text given his assumptions. So it doesn't fully answer your question necessarily. Where did the... I can't do, but you know, I didn't give you, I mean, it's a long bar tenura, but on these points, this is the ones that he gave you. You could go check yourself. It could be that I missed it. I didn't see that he explained it. I think it's just, again, and the questions that we were asking, maybe he had other questions that were bothering him. It couldn't be that we take it literally. And therefore, he had to assume that there was some deeper meaning. That's my impression. I'll point out, by the way, just before we get to the answers, that one of the commentaries, one of the late Rishonim, the Tashbetz, maybe he's an early Akron, depends on how you date these things, in the Magen Avos, that's a commentary on Perkei Avos, the last source in the first section. So he just points out that the three things we have here are not equal. Again, we saw them in multiple sources. They seem to always go together. But he has a very interesting observation. He points out at the end of the first line, Chachma is the highest thing. The Yoter Chashuv. Why Shef Sharla Adam Italelba Kihibin Ashama? Right? Intellectual things, knowledge, wisdom. Again, I don't know if he's necessarily limiting it to Torah. But those are, by definition, spiritual, you know, values. That's the highest. You know, so to be a Chacham is the greatest thing, someone who's on that level. What's the second one? Gvura. Why? Because Gvura may not be on the level of Neshama, but Kihibin Gufo. It's talking about things that are physical, at least they're part of the body. And wealth, he said, nechasim, that's the thing that's the least impressive per se. Shame, they're not even your body. They're external even to that. So there's neshama, there's guf, and then there's something that is just, you know, toys. Okay, I just thought that was a cute observation. Okay, let's dig in. What is the chacham, what is the ashir, and what is the gibor? Or gibor, then ashir, in the order of the Mishnah. So, if you remember, the Mishnah said, "Ezehu chacham, halomed mikol adam." Now, this is very nice, and it's quoted a lot. We all heard about it even before tonight. But it really begs the question, why is this so? Is that really what a chacham is? Right? Maybe that's the best student. Someone who's not embarrassed, someone who knows that you can learn from everyone. Maybe it makes the nicest person. He or she respects everyone because they know you can learn from everybody. But does that make you a chacham? Right, what exactly does the Mishnah mean? So here I think there really are two perspectives. They're very, very close to each other. I might be reading too much into it, but I thought maybe there's a little bit of a nuanced perspective. If we take a look at the first source there in that second section, so again we have the same Mefarish, the Magen Avos. So he says, what's the key? Hachacham halomed mikol adam, afilu kat mimeno. Right? This, all the Mefarshim make this point, but the question is what you do with it. When we say mikol adam, it's not a, we're not giving you everyone you some credit. You're not such a knocker because you realized that brilliant teacher X or Y is someone that I can, you know, learn from, right? That should be obvious. Somebody who knows much more than you. Wow, it's amazing. You know, I imagine if I was, you know, had been alive and had an opportunity in Israel and I could have gone to Nachum Leibovitz's shiurim, right? This does not make you a chacham. Knowing everything she taught you might make you a chacham. But the idea that you had this idea, you know, I think I'm going to go to her shiur. You know, she's brilliant. I'm going to go to Rosh Weiss's shiur. That itself doesn't make you a chacham. That's not what the Mishnah is talking about. It means someone who realizes, no, I can even learn from people who may be less than me, who don't know as much as me, who aren't as smart as me, but I can learn from them too. Okay, but it still doesn't answer the question. Okay, not, even though I know that, so someone who's not even as smart as me, someone who doesn't even know as much as me, why does that make me a chacham? So he explains, and he says, because someone who's willing to learn from anyone, going on to the second line, lo chas al kavodo lilmod mikata mimenu. It means that you don't have an ego, right? I have to be the top shear. I can only go into the advanced classes, right? People like that. That's not a chacham. I can only learn from the best teachers. No, I can learn from anybody. And why is that relevant? Because gila bedato she'enu lomed hachachma lechvod atzmo, it's a indicator, it's a litmus test that the person is l'shem shamayim and really just cares about the truth from whoever or wherever they will get it. He points out, and this is a lot of Mefarshim make this point, I don't know exactly which secular sources he's quoting, but both he and Rabbeinu Yonah below, other Mefarshim, they quote some, I'm not sure which philosophers, I'm guessing it's Greek, but I don't know for sure. Take a look on the fourth line, fourth line, excuse me. Far amru chachmei umos, Kayodea chachmos eno hoyevaso eno chacham. Chacham here doesn't mean IQ. It doesn't even mean actual knowledge. Chacham in this sense means someone who loves knowledge, who appreciates knowledge, who appreciates wisdom. That value and understanding of it and its significance, so therefore you're willing to learn from anyone who can provide that. If it was just about anava, I'm not such a big shot, I'll go to anyone's shir, that would be a wonderful midah, but that makes you an anava, it's like a chacham. It's an extra step here. It's not just, it's that the anava is an expression in this context of your love of knowledge, of your love of wisdom. And therefore, what's the difference? Who taught it to me? If it's a good idea and I didn't know it beforehand, that's amazing. And I'm happy to get it either way. I'm reminded, I mean, this is not the best example only because we're talking about like one of the great chachamim by any normal standard, but I think of this in very many ways about Rav Schechter. One of Rav Schechter's incredible characteristics is he's very, you know, when he thinks he knows something, he's convinced, you know, he's convinced. But he's totally open to being persuaded, and it doesn't matter who you are. Just as an example, again, without getting into the details at all, and I don't even know what he still does at the moment. Probably he hasn't changed his practice. But I remember years ago, I was still in Baltimore, it came out that Rav Schechter held you couldn't drink milk. It was a problem with the trephos of the cows. It's a big issue. He wasn't imposing it on the world. He wasn't around being machmir everyone. But he himself wasn't drinking milk. And he really... And he, again, you know, he's big enough that it didn't matter that every other posek in America disagreed with him. He was visiting Israel. I think it was for the OU convention. His son, Rav Shai, now in the Young Israel Woodmere, at the time was learning in the Mir. He brought Rav Schechter to Rav Eliashiv. You can find this on YouTube. I don't know if it says on YouTube what they were talking about. I know. I was there. That's what they were talking about. I was in Israel at the time with Rav Schechter at the time. So for the average person, even the average big rabbi, Rav Eliashiv says it's okay. You know, you can go to sleep at night and drink your milk. But Rav Schechter, no, he didn't think Rav Eliashiv. He thinks Rav Eliashiv is wrong. At the same time, if any one of you would have given him a svara that persuaded him, he would have turned on a dime. As it didn't, he wasn't going to change his mind just because somebody big told him it. But he would have changed in a heartbeat. If anyone, it was always about the substance. It's one of his, I'm not saying there's no one else like him, but it's a real defining characteristic of him. He just cares about the truth as he perceives it. If you could persuade him, he wouldn't say, well, who are you? Okay, then now I realize that. It's exactly, because it's a love of the truth, a love of Torah, as he perceives it, and that's all that matters. That is the Magen Avosos. So what I think, what I like about this, I hope I'm not reading too much into it, is what he's saying is that the way Chacham is being used, which is not the way we typically use the word, okay, but that's the whole point of the Mishnah. We're not using the word correctly, or at least there's another level of meaning that we don't usually know. But he's saying is the willingness to learn from anyone, even someone smaller than you, ipso facto, by definition, that already now makes you a chacham. Rabbeinu Yonah is very, very similar. He also speaks about that this is an indication of your not only humility, but your love of learning. But here, I think if you take a look at the second line of Rabbeinu Yonah, he says, Acha ohev osa. If you really love Torah or love wisdom, umisava eleha, alpha pisha eni odeh klum, even though you don't necessarily know anything yet, harizeh nikra chacham, why are you already called a chacham? Shal kalponim tasig el hachachma hamitit v'das alokim timza. Again, what I think he's trying to say is, if you have that attitude, if you love chachma so much that you don't have an ego, you're willing to learn from anyone, we can predict success. Someone with that drive, with that motivation, will be successful. So I might be reading too much into it, but at least I thought that one could suggest, even though again there are a number of, again, I didn't read all of either of the two sources, but even in the selections that I showed, that I put on the sheet, if you take a look, there's a lot of overlap in some of the language of the two sources, but I think that there is a subtle difference. That the Magen Avos is saying it already makes you a chacham now, as opposed to the way I understood the Rabbeinu Yonah is suggesting perhaps we can already call you a chacham now because yeah, we're still referring to chachma as in, like, you know something. But the point is, someone who has that drive, is willing to learn from anybody, nothing, that's the kind of person who's going to become a chacham, and it's like, nidon al shem sofo. We can already call that person out, you know, we can predict this future. You know, in the yearbook, most likely to succeed, that person. Because how? Because they're smart, because they're this, because they're charismatic, because they're good looking. No. Because they're willing to learn from anyone, and that is sufficient. Okay, any questions on that? Okay. You're all chachamim. That's fantastic. Moving on. Power, strength, gibor. Is he gibor? I would have thought, you know, the bench presses that runs into battle with his soldiers behind him. It says, acharai, right? There's so many heroes. Roy Klein. You know, so many examples of great battle figures. Yoni Netanyahu, David HaMelech, whoever, and all the warriors. Says the Mishnah, no. I mean, maybe them too, I'm not. But not for the reasons that we would have thought. What makes a gibor? Someone who's kovesh et yitro. What exactly is going on here? So it's interesting that despite what I said we might have thought, both Rabbeinu Yonah and the Magen Avos, same two Mefarshim again, they were quite active on this Mishnah. They both point out, it's not just that we would have been wrong, but that's not what the Mishnah says. Rabbeinu Yonah in particular says, if I could say in yeshivish, that wasn't even a havamina. It's the Mishnah again. The Mishnah is going to start. You know. I remember once. I think actually when I was a kid on a childhood vacation, but I think also on our honeymoon. I think we were on. You walk on the boardwalk of Venice Beach. You know, it's one of those famous iconic things you do if a tourist and go to California. And the bodybuilders, right? That's the big thing. They're all working out there on Venice Beach. Very famous thing, right? So says Rabbeinu Yonah. You thought that's what the Mishnah was going to say, and you're surprised it gave a different answer? That was not even b'cheshbon. Physical strength, that's not what the Torah is about. That's not what the Mishnah is about. But there's still a chiddush in the Mishnah. How so? So let's take a look at Rabbeinu Yonah. It says, Gvuras haguf. That's not... Gamba behema. Again, the Magen Avot says the same thing. Animals are also strong. Guess what? They're stronger than human beings. Anything you can lift, I'll find you an animal that can lift more. Anything that you can schlep, I'll find an animal that can schlep it more. It can't be just brute strength, right? That doesn't make a human anything special. Now, you might say, okay, but okay, maybe the donkey's stronger than me, but I'm stronger than you. Okay, but the point is, once we see that there's, you know, some endless amount of strength that doesn't have to require, you know, even a human being to do, that's not, there's no chance that that was what the Mishnah was referring to. He says, rather, he says, second line, lo nikrei gvura ach mi gvuras halev. Right, clearly the Mishnah was only even considering emotional or spiritual inner strength. Sheesh, but says Rabbeinu Yonah, here's the point, this is so fascinating, and this is uniquely in Rabbeinu Yonah. It says, even in the inner strength, I could have imagined two different possibilities. One, he says, is courage. Courage to face fear. Courage to go into battle, not to be scared. He says, Gibor b'melchama lo yifached libo l'olam. However, then there's a second one, third line, koach kvishat hayetzer. That is something that is different, unique. I can conquer and overcome my own weaknesses, temptations, etc. So says Rabbeinu Yonah on the fourth line, Alze amar shachacham ha'amitz v'ha'chazak megvuras halev. Forget how much pound you can weigh and how quickly you could run. This is, you know, this is not the Olympics. We're not the Greeks. We're not obsessed with the body. But even in the inner strengths, what's the, of those two? They're both inner strengths. Courage and strength of character. Right? They're two different forms of inner strength. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, the Mishnah is coming to teach us, even in that, what's considered that the greatest, last line, Kvishas hayetzer ha'oyev l'ish al panav l'ha'avido hi agura niskava v'chazaka. That as great as it is, he's not dismissing to have courage and to have, you know, face fear, external fears. That is a courageous thing. That's something, to, of course, to be respected. But what's even greater than that is facing yourself. Being able to overcome your natural proclivities, again, especially those which are, how should we say, less than admirable. And again, the Magen Avos in his own words says something very, very similar. And they have a mashal, which is actually, I think the earliest source for, is in the Chovos HaLevavos. Look at the third source in that section. A very famous idea in Rabbeinu Bechaye's Chovos HaLevavos. He talks about a certain chassid who's walking down the street, minding his own business, and he sees coming in the opposite direction, a battalion, a group of soldiers who are on their way back from a successful battle, and they're laden, and they're carrying the spoils of war. They're all in a good mood, they're singing their victory songs, and he sees that they have all the stuff that they're carrying along with them. So he asks them, you know, what's going on? They explain to him, and he says to them, second line, you should know, shavtem min ha'melchama ha'ketana. If you cut, you just won the small battle, You're carrying all your spoils. But you better be careful. Hit at du lemilchama hagadola. You should start preparing because you have a bigger battle up to come. So they looked at him like he's crazy. What are you talking about? Mahi amilchama hagadola. We just beat the victory, the enemies. No one else is coming to attack us. We won. So he answers, Amar lahem, milchemet hayetzer v'chayalav. Oh boy. Adarabba. Now that you won, you can even have a greater yetzer hara. Arrogance, testosterone, all sorts of things I can only imagine. I've never obviously was a soldier, but I can't even imagine. We've all had experiences where you have a sort of adrenaline rush and you were successful at something. I can't even imagine what it must be like for a soldier if they really, you know, came through a really difficult battle. You know, they're on a high that I can't even imagine. So says this chosid, says the Chofetz Chaim, yes, exactly then, that they're the most vulnerable to a completely different kind of enemy, who's actually an implacable foe, who's actually more devious and more difficult to defeat than any kind of physical enemy. And this, you know, is exactly, obviously, paralleling what the Mishnah had said, as we understood from Rabbi Yonah and others. What is the greatest? Well, again, it's not dismissive of other things. I don't think that would be a fair read of this at all. But it's pointing out that there are certain types of gvura, especially the kinds that are often overlooked, which in fact are a gvura, and not just a gvura, but they're in fact a greater form of gvura. I think it was Rabbi Yisrael Salanter in a different context who had said, it's easier to learn the entire Shas than it is to change one character trait. Or something like that. And if he didn't say it, someone else whose first name was Rabbi said it. I think, you know, we all know this to be true. For most people, especially as we get older, this is one of the Yetzirahs that gets worse. Many, many physical Yetzirahs weaken as we get older. That's the way Hashem made us. But there's a small number that get worse as we get older. I once heard from Dr. Pelkovitz, who once mentioned in a course that I was taking with him, that he made this observation that in general physical yetzeraharas and desires get weaker as we get older. And then he pointed out that the main exception to that, this was he was talking about from psychological literature, the main exception to that is a desire for kavod. As people get older and they, you know, come face to face with their mortality, so often, it's always, of course there's exceptions to this, but he says often the case is that they need more attention, whether it's from their children or other people, they're more sensitive, there's, you know, greater sense of sometimes pettiness or other things, even as other, you know, yitzarim are waning. I would add to this that I think, I consider this a yitzhara, so I'll put it into the list, which is being set in our ways. This is a well-known, I'm reframing it in this context, but it's like an original thought of mine. I'm sure a million people have noticed this and said this before me. But obviously when we're younger, it's never easy for anyone to change, but it's easier when we're younger. We're open to all sorts of possibilities. As we get older, so then it's just, you know, this is who I am. So for someone to actually make a change, that's unbelievable. That is a genuine gvura. I was really about to print the source sheet, and luckily, I have a little bit of a shtickle OCD when I prepare shiurim. I'm always looking for, you know, the next source. Let me open up one more sefer. So I found an unbelievable insight from the Vilna Gaon. This I love. I love, love, love. So if you recall, we haven't been focusing, I mean, we could have, but we would never end tonight. We have not at all really, until now, been focusing on the psukim that were quoted to prove each of these points. But if you recall, you can turn over the sheet if you just want to check it again. The pasuk that the Mishnah brought, how do we know that a gibor is someone who is kovesh et yitzro, was this pasuk in Mishle, all about how someone who is an erech apayim, who doesn't get angry, is greater than a gibor, and someone who's moshel beruchho, we said we didn't know what that meant exactly, is even greater than someone who is besieging, you know, sieging a city and trapping a whole population. So commenting on that pasuk, the Vilna Gaon has a perush on Mishle. So take a look at the last source in section 3. The Vilna Gaon says as follows. He points out, if you were conquering a city, you're a military strategist, you were, Alexander the Great, the Bishato, or whoever would be the modern equivalent nowadays, you are looking to besiege and take over a city, conquer a village. It could be, you know, the U.S. Army in Iraq, it could be Israel, Lebanon, it could be whatever. You're looking to take a city. says the Vilna Gaon, there's two possible things that you could do. One, which would be hard, is to annihilate the city. You just destroy them, you obliterate them, it's over, there's nothing left. That's very hard. But you know what's harder? To keep the people alive, but be in control. When there's nobody there, then it's over. But then you also have no, then you gain nothing. It's just a pile of rubble or empty houses. Says the Vilna Gaon, you know, that's not necessarily what any army really would want to do. After all, he points out, it makes more sense in the third line, Matuelet Yelo Beir. If you killed everybody, then what would you get from it? Right? Again, especially remember in the ancient world, where they really were conquering the world so that they would have taxes and workers and slaves and all that stuff. So killing everyone wouldn't help you. The harder thing, though, is to leave them alive, even though you know that they feel oppressed and they're going to try to rebel and going to try to pull a, you know, Maccabean thing on you, and yet still be in control. Okay. Now, whoever knew that the Vilna Gaon was a military strategist or analyst? The answer is, of course not. He's doing this just to set up the fact that he says the same thing is true, v'chein hu b'hamidos, when it comes to the midos. And now he gives you the taich in the words. Erech HaPayim, as I mentioned before, is talking about anger. My wife knows, because she's heard me usually over Pesach many times, give a shir on anger. I now have a new source. Because I never knew this grah until today. So I've given many shirim on anger, and I never knew this grah. So he says, on that pasuk in Mishlei, Erech HaPayim is classically understood. It's not getting angry. You're provoked, and you didn't get angry. So that says, that's the first half of the pasuk. What does that mean, to be Erech HaPayim? So he says, we're talking about the mitzvah of kas, where it's underlined. Ki kas tzarech lichbosh ad ha-tachlis. Says, kas, yes, to be a Erech HaPayim, you were provoked and you didn't get angry, that is incredible. He says, that's like the first type of conquering. There's nothing productive that comes from kas. There's no redeeming quality. It's not, well, you know, it may have been a 20% problem, but at least it was 80% good. It's not even 20% good, 80% bad. There's nothing good. This is a point which I certainly have made in many of those kashurim, right? You know, we all have tendencies, unfortunately, to get angry, but I always ask people, you know, not, you know, if you could do this before you got angry, it would be helpful, but certainly it's still wise to do it after you got angry. Can anyone think of a situation which was improved by you losing your temper? I think of many that got worse. But best case scenario is it didn't get worse. Did it ever help? I can't even think of one. And if you think of one, you're just going to be the exception that proves the rule. Right? It never, right? But in the moment, we lose. There's nothing really productive about kas, ever. So says the Vilna Gaon, that's the first thing. That's the first half of the pasuk. It should be completely, completely eradicated. Again, if we can, okay? None of us can really do that, but at least we know what we're aspiring towards. However, he continues, the middle of it's underlined, aval ha-ta'avot, the second half of the pasuk, Moshe Beruach, that's referring to every other Yetzirah we have. Insert Ta'ava here. Whichever one is, you know, your particular Achilles heel. Ha-ta'avos, hein nitzrochim avodas Hashem elokim agov. This is an idea you find in many thinkers, but it's really powerfully elucidated here. So all those other Ta'avos, yes, it's true that we have bad, immoral, negative, usher applications of them. But they're not inherently bad. Or they're not completely unproductive. Any yetzer that we have can serve something very productive. He's referring to a very, very well-known Gemara that speaks about how the Chachamim Davin, the yetzer hara, you know, for sexual perversions to be completely eradicated, and it worked. And then there were no babies. Okay, not only human babies, but nothing. Nothing was born. And the Chachamim said, we're going to get rid of the yetzer hara, there'll be no world. I remember years ago, in a similar vein, Rabbi Lamb talking even about people's in pursuit of kavod. And kavod is, you know, often very strongly condemned by Chazal. But he says, but if we totally remove that completely from ourselves, who'd accomplish anything? How many people could be 100%, mamish, 100, not 99, 100% L'shem Shemayim and really accomplish something great? I don't care if it's in the rabbinic field, or in medicine, or in finance. People want to accomplish. Is that 100% you know, good? No, maybe there's a little mixture, and sometimes for certain people, a lot of mixture of not such a great impulse. But says the Gra, okay, we want to try to refine and remove the impurities of the negative parts. But we're not looking to eradicate it the way we're trying to do to anger, he says. But rather, he says, they're nitzrach, and we need those for physical success, spiritual success. Rather, what should we do? Tzarch l'shbor osan, but gam yisharu etzlo. We want to break them, meaning we want to get rid of the negative impurities, the negative impact, but we don't want to remove them. We need them. We need those impulses. We need that part. That's like the second. That's like an even stronger, a harder thing. That's like conquering the city, but not killing everybody, but keeping them under your thumb. And that's how he understands the pasuk. Tov erech apayim, make gibor. Stam, he says. That's, if you can do that, that's even better than being any kind of gibor. If you can, just like a certain gibor can destroy, can kill a person, if you could kill your anger, would be amazing. But Moshe Barucho, who's someone who cannot destroy, but control. Moshe can control their taivas, use them for good and not for bad. Who's Tis Tov Yoter? He's like someone who conquered a city. He's Moshe Barucho Shemocha Gam Benotel Hadram Nisrachim Shover Hamotarot. So I thought that's just, you know, it's not directly explaining the Mishnah, but he's explaining the pasuk that's in the Mishnah. And I think if we're talking about what is Gibor HaKovesh Et Yitzro, so what the Vilna Gaon is asking us to consider is there's different ways to be Kovesh the Yetzer. Now, if you told me, for a lot of people, they can't control it, right? If it's still in them, it's going to control them, right? You know, so if you're that person, then maybe you do need to eradicate a certain midah, but you should realize that it comes at a cost. Much, much better would be to get control of yourself as opposed to completely eradicating. And let's finish up the next few minutes with a few final points. So the last of the big three in the Mishnah, Ezu Ashir, HaSameach B'Chelko. And here, I just wanted to point out a short observation of Rabbeinu Yonah, because I think this is very, very important. Let's say a person is Sameach B'Chelko and they have nothing. So if my first suspicion, I admit it, I'm going to admit this, I think they're faking it. I think they're probably not so happy. But let's say they're really, really, really happy, genuinely sincere. But is that enough to make them already an usher? Words have to have some kind of meaning, don't they? I mean, I know, again, not today, not postmodernism, but in theory, words are supposed to have some meaning. So I'm asking the question that way, to set up what I didn't know this before I was reviewing this. Actually, I saw this last night for the first time. I think it's a brilliant Rabbeinu Yonah. Take a look, number four. Ezu Ashir, Ha'omer, someone who's willing to say, Dai li b'chelki. Okay, that's just Rabbeinu Yonah, rephrasing the Mishnah. I have enough. Achar, but because, why? Because there is a certain minimum standard. It's not no matter what I have. You know, there's some people who don't, you know, if you can't support yourself, if you can't support your family, that's not an ashir. You're just, you know, you're probably a bad parent, a bad spouse, if you don't care and you're not trying to get more. If you don't have enough to put food on the table, and you say, but I'm happy, it's okay. That's not, I don't know if that's good, but it's certainly not an ashir, says the Rabbeinu Yonah. I have enough to support myself. And la'asok patora. So, in other words, what's Rabbeinu Yonah saying? This is so powerful. There's a certain minimum that we need to be able to sustain our physical life and our spiritual life. And, please God, we should all be blessed with families. It's not just for ourselves. We don't live for ourselves alone. We live for our families. Once you have that, says Rabbeinu Yonah, now everything is a cherry on top after that. Now, you have to say, how much is that? I think the answer is obvious. It depends on the time and place in which you live. There's no magic number for that. Right? Cost of living, and even the most basic, is obviously going to depend. But nevertheless, it's only once you have that, then you're encouraged to say, I have enough. But to say that before you get to that point is too much of a good thing. It's a good mita to be Sameach B'Chelkecha. But not before you've reached that point. If you have so little ambition, you don't even have enough for that, then that's actually not something, says Rabbeinu Yonah, to admire at all. And then he makes the point, the rest of the piece is making the broader point, which is what the Mishnah is well known for, that, you know, there's nothing that can drive a person, you know, into more misery than pursuit of money. You know, that's the pasuk. I didn't put it on the sheet. Actually, I did put it on the sheet. I forgot. Ohev kesef lo yizba kesef. and many midrashim on this, and we don't need midrashim, we just need to watch the news or just look at some of our friends, unfortunately, or people that we know from work or in the neighborhood, right? People who are obsessed with money, it doesn't matter how much money, I want to be a millionaire, okay, after, well, how many? Well, when I got my one, and then once you have one, then you want five, then you want 10, then you want 100, and it's amazing that, you know, if you hang around, people who have, you know, kind of $50 million, but if they're friends with people, or they just know that there's somebody else who has 100 million, yeah, if they're a reasonable, normally human being, they're not miserable. But they don't feel rich, because the other guy's got more. Right? So that's all, if you see this as some end, you know, end in itself, and you know, that's the goal. Again, this is not, I repeat, I don't think the Mishnah or the Rabban Yonah, we're not anti-wealth in Judaism. It's a question of perspective and emphasis. But in terms of just core happiness, yes, it's true that if a person is happy with what they have and not always looking to see what I don't have, the neighbor can do this and I can't do that, yes, you will be a happier person. I don't think we even, I mean, we didn't need the Mishnayos now that we have the psychologist, but we don't need the psychologist to tell us this because we already have the Mishnah. I think it's compellingly true. And here I want to mention Dr. Pelklevitz a second time. I really, if I could get back in touch with him, I'd ask him to send me this study. But I remember many years ago, I'm quoting a study, you know, and I'm sure there have been many of these such studies. What's the correlation between wealth and happiness? And I remember him saying clearly that over study after study over study, there is no correlation. Again, all we need to know is look at Hollywood, and there's not a bunch of more miserable people than that. They have more money than they know what to do with, and they're all miserable. But it's not just Hollywood. There are plenty of other miserable people. Unfortunately, I just read a horrible story in the news in New York. Some billionaire hedge fund guy, you know, unfortunately jumped to his death because from his fund of $20 billion, a lot of people took out money. He wasn't doing so well, and he was left, I think, with only $3 billion in his fund. It's Nebuch. I mean, Mamash is unrachmanis. I'm not making fun at all. But if that's your world, then, you know, your fund goes down to $3 billion. It's, you know, you literally can't imagine living. So, you could also have $3 billion and be very happy. I'm sure of it. Hashem, I'm really, you know, testing. Bachuni nabazos. I'm willing to take the test. But, he says there's no correlation. Other than, he said, maybe a negative one. He said among teens of wealthy people, there's usually higher degrees of depression and other such things. So maybe there's a negative correlation. But then he added, like, I don't know if he knew this Rabban Yonah. He'd love if I told him this Rabban Yonah. He loves, you know, great Torah sources that confirm psychological studies. He said, but that's assuming you have the bare minimum. I remember him saying it. If you have the bare minimum, then there's no correlation between happiness and wealth. If you don't even have the bare minimum, yeah, then of course you're going to be miserable when you don't know how to put food on the table, or you don't know how to put a roof over your head, let alone your children's head. And this is Mahamish exactly. I was like so excited to see Rabban Yonah last night. Is exactly what he said all those years ago. Let's just conclude with, last but not least, is the Bar Tanura on the last point. Is a mechubad, who's deserving of honor? Someone who honors other people. So I'll just read it outside, I'll paraphrase it. The Bar Tanura here points out that the first three midos, the big three that were the Mishnah is famous for, if you have those, you're deserving of respect innately in the eyes of Hashem and should be in the eyes of others. That's the objective, what makes you a good person. Being mechabed other people is not the same thing. However, he says, the Mishnah is coming to say, but if, despite the fact that Hashem respects you for these three midos, and people should, but they might not. The guy who, you know, goes to every shir, even the shir of the simple shir, that doesn't mean all of a sudden he's going to get a lot of respect in the world. So says the Bar Tanura, says the Mishnah at the end is giving practical advice. Very fascinating insight. He says, even if people aren't respecting you, nevertheless, ma yaseh yimichubad me'achirim yichabed edebriot. If you really want to make sure that people will honor you, if you honor them, you know, people will respect you for it. They feel the need to reciprocate. I think it's a little bit manipulative, but very psychologically astute. You know, you give a compliment, you know, people are more likely to respect you. But that's clearly, he makes the point that I think it's not a surprise that over time, this Mishnah is more well known for the first three, and he clearly does set up a hierarchy of the first three as opposed to the last one. I just want to conclude with a simple observation. I think it's obvious and intuitive, but I was so excited, I saw it in two svarim. One was in the Sefer Orchos Yosher from Rav Chaim Kanievsky. And then I also saw it in Rabbi Lau's commentary on Pirkei Avos. And they both made the same point, which is the brilliance of this Mishnah is that all four of the things that we're talking about are counterintuitive and revolutionary from the perspective of how society looks at things and what we would have expected. When we talk about what is a chacham, so we think about, I was thinking, you know, I'm sure he wasn't thinking of himself, but I was thinking when Rav Chaim Konevsky was writing this, he could have been describing himself. What do we think of a chacham? Some big rabbi or scholar that everyone goes to ask their questions to. Right? Everyone's going to that person to learn from. And what does the Mishnah tell us? What's a chacham? Someone who learns from others. What's a gibor? So we would think someone who defeats everyone, that no one can defeat him. And what's the Mishnah's answer? Someone who defeats himself. What's a ashir? So we would think someone who, you know, has more and more and more, that's a rich person. And the Mishnah says no. An ashir is someone who's happy with what he already has. And last but not least, mechubad, we would think someone who everyone praises, someone who gets honored at the shul dinner, who gets honored at the this, whose name is on the wall, that's mechubad. And the answer is no, says the Mishnah, exactly the opposite almost. Someone who's giving honor instead of receiving it is an honorable person. So I think, first of all, just, you know, it nicely summarizes and encapsulates everything that we've seen, but it also highlights, I think, you know, one of the things that's so great about Torah generally, in Perkei Avos so specifically, which is that it's an incredible mix of stuff which really is intuitive, but still it gives, you know, giving chazals and primatur and the support to that is important. But also there's so much of it which is actually not intuitive at all, and therefore is in fact, you know, profound and insightful, and in some cases even revolutionary. Okay, thank you very, very much. And again, it's a privilege always to learn with you, and I certainly hope that the Torah should be l'ilui nishmas, and give chizuk for the wonderful family. Thank you.